Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Scouting Hot Finds Radio. This is episode 75. My name is Jason Spangler, the Santee Swapper, your host. Tonight on the show, we're going to have an interview with eBay power seller Nick Loesch, who goes by First Call Tex on the eBay. He has a humongous Boy Scout memorabilia store there, 14,000 plus items. When I posted on Facebook that I was going to be interviewing Nick for the show, people were affectionately calling him Uncle Nick. They were looking forward to hearing his wisdom. But to start off the show, one thing we're trying to do this reboot of Scouting Hot Finds podcast, we're trying to include Traderee sponsors. And so first on the line, I want to welcome Michael Keller, and he is going to share with us some information about the Two Cuban Nooney Lodge Traderee and auction that's coming up in February. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Thank you, Jason. Appreciate the opportunity. Yes, we are going to hold our 26th annual auction on we're going to hold our Traderee first on Friday night, February 24th, and then the auction will be the next day on Saturday, February 25th. It'll be held at our service center for our council. We're Utah National Parks Council, Lodge 508, and that's in Orem, Utah. And we follow the standard, buying, trading, selling at the Traderee Friday night, and then we have a silent auction and a live auction on Saturday.
Now, when I told Nick Loesch that you were going to be on tonight, he said, I've actually been to that Traderee. Do you pull from a lot of those Western states, or what kind of a footprint do you have?
Well, you know, we have three councils in Utah, and anymore they all hold Traderees and auctions, and then we have two in Idaho that are part of our section. We have five lodges, and so we pretty much have the same people that travel from one council to the other. We try to get new people involved and our youth involved, and we're always any in the listening audience out there that would love to see what Utah's like in February, we'd love to have you come.
I noticed that your tables are only $10. That's got to be probably the lowest price I've seen on any Traderee flyer.
Yes, $10 for a table. And we have a nice set of patches for donations. And our council totem is a dinosaur, and our lodge totem is a cougar.
I have to tell you my little Two Cuban Nooney story. When I was a very young patch trader in 1989, I was at the Boy Scout Jamboree, and me and a buddy of mine who were pretty green and new, we were trading OA flaps out on the trail, and one of us got a Two Cuban Nooney flap, and it had, I forget what characters it had on it. I want to say it had like an Indian, and I could be getting this all wrong, but an Indian riding a horse, and there was like a bunch of flames behind him. And we just thought that was one of the coolest flaps we traded for at the Jamboree. So, but I just remember us talking about Two Cuban Nooney. Like, that was such a cool name for an OA lodge, too. So,
yeah, it means you are my friend in the Paiute language.
Oh, very nice. Okay, good. All right. Well, and so if anyone wants to find out more information, I will post a link to the flyer in the show notes page for this episode of Scouting Hot Finds Radio. And that can be found at my website, scoutinghotfinds.com. Michael, thank you for coming on, and I sure do hope that everybody out west will head out to the 26th annual Two Cuban Nooney Lodge Traderee and Auction.
I appreciate you letting me be on, Jason. I'll look forward to maybe meeting up with you at the Jamboree this summer.
Oh, definitely. I'll be there. Flag me down. I'll be wearing I'll have to wear some special colored hat or something, but definitely look for me.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks
appreciate
again.
It. All right. Now, folks, I'd like to welcome onto the line my guest tonight, Nick Loesch. Goes by First Call Texas on eBay. When I posted on Facebook that I was going to have Nick on tonight, people were affectionately calling him Uncle Nick. So I feel like I'm interviewing Norm off of Cheers. You're like everybody's friend. They want to have a beer with you and you need some barbecue, Nick.
Yeah, well, Uncle Nick likes that barbecue, that's for sure.
Yeah, I tell you, people were hoping you were going to share some tips. I don't know if you have like a top 10 list you can send me, and we'll post it online or something.
Mostly it's going to be Texas or Kansas or Missouri. I had trouble finding some good barbecue in South Carolina the last time I was over there. I just didn't know where to go. But over near Chris's place, I did have something that I've never had before, and that was a bologna burger. It was definitely different. A hamburger.
That is new on me.
Pretty strange.
That is.
Anyway.
Well, hey, we're going to kind of. What's that?
Let me make a comment about his trade read first. For most of you people that don't know, that tradery is only Friday. Saturday is nothing but auctions. So that's the reason the table's only $10, because you're only getting one day. And it shuts down about 10 o'clock. So if you're a late comer, if you go do something like, you know, watch the kids play soccer or something, you're not going to get much trading done because they close it down. The kids stay in the center overnight. And they set up the auctions for the next day, and there's plenty of auctions. Those of you that have been to Chris Jensen's traderies might not have quite as many as he does, but they will have some. They will have some great auctions, both for youth and for everybody. And in their live auctions, you're going to see some fantastic stuff. They have some woodworkers up there that put stuff in the auctions and everything. I mean, we were impressed. The problem was we had driven all the way up there thinking that it was 2 days, and we didn't get anything out till about 8 o'clock on Friday night. And had to back it up at 8 o'clock. So we learned our lesson. So
yeah, I noticed that they have silent auctions Saturday morning, and then they have a live auction at noon, is what the Tradery Flyer says.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much the way it was, I think, back then. We turned around, and it's unless you're flying in up there. That's a long drive if you're coming from the south.
Yeah.
About 1,600 miles, and the last 400 of it is as dark as the inside of a billy goat. And you're going through the reservation out there, and we saw an ambulance coming, and it was 45 minutes before we ever met him.
Wow.
And he's going full speed to Orem, and we're going full speed going south. So it's dark. It's real dark. Anyway,
well, a little bit later. I was going to say a little bit later. I know we're going to talk about traderies and that kind of stuff. So let's kind of get started. Let's go back and, you know, we picked on you there, called you Uncle Nick. You got a few years on you. Take us back to the days when you were getting started with this, Nick, back the days of the trader, and maybe just sort of tell us what the hobby was like back then when you got into it.
Well, back in those days, everybody traded one for one, my flap for your flap. Of course, back then, everything was red and white, shoulder patches, so community strips were still around. But our council went to the red and white council shoulder patch for the 1960 Jamboree. And they were like 12 cents a piece, which was crazy, ridiculous price as far as we were concerned. You know, but I guess there are several things that hooked me on the hobby. There was a guy down the street from me who had been an Air Scout, and he had gone to the 53 Jamboree, and in his closet was hanging a blue Air Scout uniform with a 53 Jamboree patch on it, and I was hooked when I saw that patch. I was hooked right then. And my first year I went to camp was probably 58, and they had just changed from our twill patches to the what we call a woven patch now. And so the old patches were in the trading post for a quarter apiece, and I bought $2 worth of them, which I thought was crazy. I didn't think I'd trade that many, but I did. And that was the days when Forrest Reynolds ran the trader, and there were guys. I traded with Forrest and Hal Rudd, Harvey Zucker, Dave Lubitz, Morris Olswich, Joel Tom Mitter. So some folks, the father and son, the Diamonds, Herb Block, who just died here a couple of 3 years ago, Lou Carter, Brian Schenck, who just died last year. And then the ones that I can remember right now that are still alive are Carl Steinle and Joe Malloy, Paul Myers, and my buddy Bill Kennedy, who was a section chief back in an area chief back then in 65. We were roommates at the 65 NOAC and got to be good friends with him. He's still alive, and visited him when I was in Florida last time. So there was, I guess I saw Forrest Reynolds first probably, and he had a briefcase full of flaps, and I couldn't imagine having that many patches ever. And now I can feel several briefcases full, but it was the days when there weren't any prices on things. Everybody just traded. It didn't have a value, mine for yours. And it seemed like there was nobody worried about what something was worth. If they didn't want your patch, you just went on till you found somebody that would trade with you. Nobody got their feelings hurt, and they'd go, I've already got one of those, or I got one of those back at camp, or, you know, mine's better than yours, and you need to give me two of yours. And I'd go, no, I don't think so, and I'd move on. So anyway, I've got a couple of stories if you'd like to hear them, but, you know,
I think you told me a story about the 65 NOAC, so I know the people are anxious to hear some stories. So, yeah, let's go ahead and start with it.
Well, let's start with the 65 NOAC. Bill and I and a couple other guys were tired of seeing the younger scouts because I was 17. He was almost 19, I guess, then. So they would stand the blue heron up on its edge, so it's standing about 5 feet high. I mean, 5 inches high. They thought it was 5 feet, and they want you to stack up patches from the tabletop up to the top of their patch, standing up on its end, and then they trade you one for basically unrestricted. Back then, you know, anybody could get one if you knew who to get it from. So we traded for one in the quad at Wendell Wilkie where they were staying, and then we cut it up and burned it right in front of them. And it made the NOAC newspaper. Those of you that know Chuck Dellert, he has a copy of that NOAC newspaper that or something that tells about it. He sent it to me, but I couldn't find it tonight when I was looking for it to tell you what it was. But if you know Chuck, he's on Facebook, and he'll probably send it to you. The other good story I really have is I met this guy named Carl Steinle, and the name was not familiar to me. And this has been, about 2001, 2002, and we met at a little restaurant here in Fort Worth. And he walked in, and he said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I go, "No, I really don't." And he laid down a Xerox copy of a letter I had sent him back in 1965, trading my patch for his patch. He was in San Antonio then, but he went by Bill because his dad's name was Carl, and until his dad died, he didn't use Carl. He used Bill, so that's the reason I didn't recognize his name at all. But, you know, that shows that some people just keep things forever, because we're talking about 65 to 2001 or 2, and he has a copy of that thing. And he knew that the day we met was my birthday because I'd said something about it in the letter. You know, I got to go, got to get to the scout office today, you know, blah, blah, blah. Got a birthday party tonight, blah, 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 you know. Now you do. Back in those days, it wasn't like it is now where you can talk to somebody and have a patch in the mail the next day. You had to wait for the letter to get here for the trade and then mail your trade out to them or try to mail them and hope that you were getting what they said they were sending. And these guys that get impatient after 7 days now, you know, it took 14 days to put together a trade because you'd have to send a letter to Carl that says, "I'll trade you one of mine for one of yours." The rules of the trader back then were you don't send a patch till you got a deal. So, you know, that's what I said. couple of weeks to put together any kind of a trade. And these guys today want instant gratification. They buy it today. They want it tomorrow. You know, it's, they're so used to iTunes and stuff, I guess, that they're, you know, they have no patience anymore. So anyway, those are a couple of...
The way that that worked, let's just kind of go back in time a little bit. Tell me the way that it worked in the trader. How did that all – you just described the actual trading piece, but how was it set up? Was it kind of the whole idea was people would have their addresses in the back of the book or something and you guys would swap them around? How did that work?
Well, they had it that way, but they also put out a monthly newsletter that told – what was going on, much like we see on Facebook now, the little deals about, oh, it's an ordeal at some camp this weekend, or it's a section conference at some camp, or, you know, whatever. But those were the little blurbs that were in the newsletter when Forrest ran it. And I don't have any of the ones when Dave Lubitz was running it, so I don't remember, you know, I don't remember how it looked when he was doing it. But after Forrest died, well, I kind of... I don't know how I didn't stay in that loop of the mailing list there for a while. And so consequently, some of that stuff, when we moved after my mother died, we're cleaning out the stuff at the house. I had people helping me, and I guess they just threw that stuff away. And my mind, the chemotherapy I'm taking now doesn't always allow me to remember things that I'd like to remember. That's why I had to ask you what questions you were going to ask so I could kind of make notes on it. But basically, the Blue Book was originally a little mimeographed book that was stapled together about the size of, about the size of the original Blue Book. I don't know. It's a small book, like, it'd be like folding, taking a half a sheet of paper and then folding it in half the long way and made two pages out of the book.
Kind of like a booklet.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a booklet. And they were stapled together. And then any new traders that joined in that period of time, they'd be included in the back of the book. But anybody that joined, say, in January, well, before they put out the next book, well, they'd list. And then once or twice a year, they send out a list of all of the people that were current on their little cheap dues, which basically covered the postage to mailing that stuff out and the printing costs, you know. Wasn't very expensive. But there's still a bunch of those people out there that, you know, are still alive, you know. Gene Berman was one. He's still out there kicking, and he was just getting out of dental school then, and of course Carl's around, and Joe Malloy's around, and Paul Myers is around, Kennedy's around, and I'm sure there are others that I can't think of. I trade now with Hal Rudd's son, Bob Rudd. Hal was the guy that put all the 123s that you see in the world. He was the one that put them out, and he was a big trader up there, and we traded almost every letter. We traded at least one patch. And he was one of those guys that was down to needing virtually nothing. In fact, I got him the 35 F1 that he had in his collection. And so that was a one-per-life restriction, and you weren't getting those unless somebody died or somebody moved or whatever. And we got a couple of them from a guy who had, and his father, who had moved to Jacksboro from Wichita Falls, and they didn't belong to that lodge anymore, and they weren't too hot about keeping the patches. And I think I paid them like $20 a piece for them or something, which was, you know, working for 60 cents an hour back then, well, that was a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because lodge patches, when I started collecting, were 35 cents. Then they went to 50 cents, and then they went to a dollar, which I thought was a ripoff. But I did, when I went to the Jamboree in 64, I did have 200 of our flaps to trade. So I spent all my earnings buying flaps to trade. So,
well, how'd you come out? How many of those 200 did you come home with in 64?
None. I had 200 different flaps. I was a junior assistant scoutmaster in charge of physical arrangements, which meant you had to be in camp to make sure it was all cleaned up for inspection and all that other stuff. And then once then, everybody else is gone. They're gone to the rifle range or taking a hike or going here and going there. I just walked up. We were not that far from a trading post, and I just take my little briefcase that said the Cowtown Trader on the side of it, and I'd go up there, and I was the Forest Rentals for our area down there. I just opened my, you know, and I had, anytime anybody would trade two, I'd trade two, you know. That way I had one to keep and one to trade. And that's what I tell kids now. If you can get two, get two. You know, one to keep and one to trade. And that way you're not just constantly changing your collection around.
No, I hadn't heard of the Cowtown Trader. What's the story on that name?
Oh, I was just, everybody had a name back then. You know, that was, Fort Worth's nickname was Cowtown. And everybody was some kind of trader. You know, like you're the Santee Swapper. Everybody had some kind of a nom de guerre, you know, that they used when they were trading. And I had a scout that looks kind of like the one that's on Jensen's stuff, you know, the scout with the skinny legs and the big shorts,
yep,
and stuff like that. And it was painted on in the red model airplane paint. It said the Cowtown Trader, and had that guy on there. And that way I could set it down and I didn't have to open it up. People that knew my name already, you know, knew me, they knew I had patches to trade. I didn't have to open it up until I could find a good seat where I could put it down and open it. And, you know, I just let people, you know, they come up and they say, I want to trade for it. And I'd say, this is my flap and it's yours. You know, we trade. Said I came back with 200 different flaps that, in fact, I still got some of them.
Do you still have the briefcase?
No, I guess it got when moved from all the stuff from my mother's house and we're cleaning it out and doing restoration on it, that it just got thrown in the dumpster. I don't know. You know, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
I had my Caldwell pens. Luckily, they didn't get thrown in the dumpster, but I had both the Brotherhood and the Vigil Caldwell pen until somebody in the hobby offered me more than they were worth for them. So anyway, it's been a fun run, I guarantee you. I've turned up a lot of stuff over the years, that stuff that people have never seen before, you know. But you know, back in the 80s, the hobby, I think, as you said, went to retail catalogs and phone auctions and all that other stuff. And I was raising two stepdaughters, and I didn't have time for that. I was trying to make a living. Girls cost a lot more than boys do to raise them.
Yeah.
I worked hard just to stay even, you know. And so I missed a lot of that stuff. And I got, you know, I'd tell people I don't really trade anymore. Every now and then somebody would send me a flap without, you know, they'd find my name on a list somewhere, and I would, I'd mail them one back. But you know, I wasn't really into the trading multiples with people anymore. So anyway, I did find that batch of stuff, which had an event patch from our lodge here, Nishkin Nalupa Apalachi, back in 1965. I reached into the fire where the secretary had thrown all the ones that were left over, and I grabbed a bundle of them, and with him screaming, you can't do that, you can't do that, and I said, you threw them away. I learned how to reach in the fire and get my hand out real quick. I had about 50 of those little puppies when I got back to digging out stuff. He's still around too, and I remind him of that all the time. It's one of those fun things that you go, remember when I stuck my hand in the fire? Yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, when did you get really sort of plugged back into the hobby then? If you were busy with family in the 80s, when did you kind of, you know, because I've just, the whole time I've known you, you've kind of been a big patch dealer guy.
I'll tell you what, I got back in the hobby, I don't know, about 2000 or 2001, pretty active. And it was, when I got to be maybe a little bit earlier than that, maybe in the 90s, I don't really remember when I started. All the time, though, I was in the auction business back in the 80s and early 90s, and we had antique shops all the way up until, I don't know, 95, 96. And so anytime I'd go out junking, which is what I call it, I'd go in antique shops looking for a sleeper that I could buy and make some good money off of. And if they had Boy Scout stuff, well, I'd try to buy it. Sometimes you couldn't buy it. But about 2000 or 2001, I was out in West Texas, and I picked up a Kotso 330 F5, which was their Brotherhood patch, had a blue border. You got one, and you were supposed to turn it back in if you left the lodge. Of course, I don't guess anybody ever did, but they're still pretty rare, you know, in the area. And I paid $6 for it at this antique shop, which I thought was a crazy price to pay. But came home and I looked at it and I go, well, I don't really have anything to go with that, and I don't really collect that lodge anymore, you know. So I put it on eBay, and that night, the next morning when I looked on eBay, it had gone to $90, and I was hooked. I went, well, hell, I'm passing up a lot of stuff that I didn't realize this stuff was going that high. And so I started digging out in Philmont patches and stuff that I had and putting them up on eBay and looking a lot more and starting to dig up old timers that I knew had traded with us and traded with me and some of my friends back in the 60s and 70s. One of my fraternity brothers had a collection. I ended up selling his estate after he died for his wife, and she thought she might get $500 out of it. We got almost 10,000 out of it.
And wow.
She was pleased, and I was pleased, and so was everybody else that got the stuff out of there, because he hadn't traded since the 69 NOAC. So he had some
nice old stuff then.
So he had a neckerchief that was the contingent neckerchief. It wasn't the official contingent neckerchief, but the adult who was leading the contingent had these made so he could recognize our people across the area at NOAC. And ended up, nobody really knew these things existed except me. And I'd never had one, and I got three of them, one of Frank's and two that Hugh still had. And that's the only three that I know of that ever came out of there. So, you know, that stuff is out there. You just got to know where to look for it. And you got to ask questions. It's just like, it's like police work. You know, you got to go, well, you know, somebody says, well, you know, my uncle was a guy, to go, well, what does he have? And guy I went to high school with lives in Chakota, Oklahoma, which is where the Chakotay 154 came from. And he said, well, my grandfather was in Scouts. I got a bunch of his stuff. Well, I made a special trip through there. Turns out he's got a merit badge sash was all he had. And he thought it was worth about $1,000. And, you know, it's about might have been worth $100. And he said, what's worth that to me to keep it from my grandpa's? I said, it certainly should be. You know, you just don't have anything that on there that's unusual. You know, if you had a spider on there or something unusual, well, it'd be different. But just in a long period of time. So anyway, that's one of those things. You just kind of got to dig to find the stuff.
All right. So when you got plugged into eBay back in 2001, did you start, we talked about traderies earlier. Is that about the time you started going to traderies and all that? Or what was it like back then, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I started going back to traderies probably about 2000. 99 or 2000, I started, they used to have a big one in Houston when Randy Reiniger was still alive, and and went down there. And that's where I met Ron Aldrich for the first time. I'd known his name and met a lot of other people. I bought 1,000 flaps from Aldrich that weekend out of his tubs to give me some fresh trading stock. And so most everything I had 3 to 5 of, and I'd trade it and throw it in a tub. And then when I got enough stuff, you know, when I got the 50 or 60, I'd put a little bit up. And then I sold, met Steve Ross, who's younger than I am, didn't know him then. And he, I sold a bunch of his collection off for him when he was refinancing his business. And so then I started making the traderies. And, I, you know, if I could fly there or drive there, why, and it didn't interfere with my work, why, now, even if it did interfere sometimes, well, I'd go. But, you know, I've never been up any further east than Philly and New Jersey. I've never been up to New England. But I've been all over the Midwest, Indiana and Illinois and Missouri and Tennessee and Alabama and South Carolina and North Carolina, Florida, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Utah. And then I'd fly out of California. I'd fly to Weatava Traderie out there. If you fly to John Wayne Airport, you fly right over their scout office. So it's just a hop, skip, and a jump over there. You won't put if you rent a car, you won't put 25 miles on the car going over there. And if you stay in the motels that are close by, you won't put 20 miles on it. You know. In the, on the weekend, but they have a lot of auctions at that tradery too. They have the silent auctions going on for all night Friday and all day Saturday. And I always came away from there with a grocery bag full of stuff. So they have a lot of interesting stuff, and it's good for a guy like you. They're not interested in the South Carolina stuff. So unless they're a real, go online and do a lot of research, you can buy some interesting stuff from your area when you get that far away, because they don't care anything about it. You can trade for it. I can't tell you how much good Texas stuff I picked up going to the California traderies or going to Illinois or going to Wisconsin or Michigan or, you know, Iowa, Kansas. Because they don't care about it. It doesn't mean anything. They collect the stuff from right around there, and they don't collect. But everybody's got some stuff that they traded for at a Jamboree or a NOAC, and that's how they, you know, that's how they get the stuff that they want. They find some sucker like me to buy their stuff or trade them stuff from their area for the stuff they have from my area.
Yeah, that works out well. It does. Hey, all right, let's over the last 15 years, Nick, as you've kind of been in this hobby, really doing it heavy, how do you see the hobby has changed? I think I saw in, it was 2001 when you got on eBay, and obviously you're doing all these traderies. What's the last 15 years been like?
Well, it's been good and it's been bad. The prices got crazy for a while, and in 2007-08, nine stuff just went out of sight, and it ran a lot of people out of the collecting, because stuff that used to be $10, everybody wanted $25 for it, and the stuff that was $100, they wanted $200 for it, and the stuff that, you know, the once the first flaps book came out and some of that stuff, why, that just, and once they found out that somebody would pay $20,000 for a flap or $25,000 for a flap, well, that was, the race was on. You can dig the most of this stuff and get the most money. You know, Conley Williams made a living for many years off of selling patches that he dug running ads when he was a kid, or a younger man than he is now. You know, he'd run ads in places where the lodge had closed up, and he'd go spend a week there digging stuff from the old-timers, you know. But the traderies are, they've become selleries, not traderies anymore, you know. Everybody's got stuff for sale. There's hardly any trading that goes on, you know. And I miss that. And so when I see the kids coming in the door, I got little bags of stuff. And, you know, I'll make up three or four bags of stuff. And some of them got 20, 30 patches in them. And I'll give them to the kids that got nothing to trade, you know. And I'll say, you can do whatever you want to with these. These are, you know, these are for you to have. And you can keep the ones you want, or you can keep them all, or you can trade them all off, or whatever you want to do. And it gives them something to do while they're there with mom and dad, looking. Mom and dad might collect, and the kid really doesn't collect, but it gets him out of their hair because they'll run around trading with people, and they come back with some pretty interesting stuff.
Well, that's a great tip. We all need to do that. Help the young guys out.
Yeah. If you don't, we're not going to have a hobby in a few years. I would say that all in all, everything. Traderies are good. The problem is that everybody has, you know, they have so many other activities besides the OA and scouts. They've got soccer or basketball or football or something that it really has taken away from the fact that people can actually go to a tradery. You know, if they had that Tucuba Nooney tradery down here, they wouldn't have hardly anybody on Friday night because right now, my friend's got three kids, and this Friday, each one of those kids has a game after school, basketball game, and it'll end up being 9 or 9:30 before they're done. And that there's always something to interfere with a tradery. So just have to figure out what's best and go to everything where they trade and go trade, you know.
Yeah, Conway, yeah.
Right. You know, if you've got a lodge close to you that's not your lodge, you can get the advisor will let you visit and come for the Cracker Barrel or whatever in the evening and trade patches. And, you know, sometimes they won't. But, you know, you just got to put up with it and do what you can do and cultivate friends that trade. We had a little, several years ago, we had a little local tradery that was all the guys from the old Lodge 489, and we went to a guy's house on a Sunday afternoon and had a little tradery, and people picked up some odd pieces that they didn't even know existed, you know. So you can do stuff like that, just have an impromptu tradery, invite everybody over, some cheese and crackers and soda pop, and say, bring some patches and let's trade.
Sounds good. Well, hey, one other thing we wanted to touch base on was eBay. You've got, I think, feedback rating of 24,000 plus. You've got a eBay store with 14,000 plus items in it. What are some tips that you can give somebody on how to run a good eBay business?
Well, I guess the way to run it is to price the stuff right, and if it's not priced right, be willing to accept some reasonable offers, you know. I've got probably half of my inventory on sale right now, stuff that's not selling at the price I have on it. So I marked it down some 10%. I don't think there's any 10%, 15, 20, and 25% off on stuff in my store right now. So it's you know, it's time to go looking. And the other half of the store, if you make an honest effort to try to buy it, not steal it, because I still am. I'm still breathing, so good deal. I'd rather you own it than I own it, because I'm doing my own estate sale, as I told you before. You know, this moving this stuff as fast as I can.
Right, that's right. Just going to give you a shout out and say it's first call text collectibles. That's the name of your eBay store. People can look it up and find it.
And I'll be right inside the door for those of you that are coming to Dallas. And I have some great display items that are going to be available. I have a rack similar to that two rack that you have. Mine's about 5 feet long, has a light. It'll hold about 250 neckerchiefs. You need to, if you're driving to Dallas, and you need something that'll do that or hold 250 pages of anything, with patches in it. Why, it'd be a real bargain on that deal, because it costs about $100 to ship, and it's worth several hundred dollars, but I just want $100 for it. So I'd be right inside the door there. I've got some other stuff that I'll be bringing. So if they come and see me, well, I'll try to do a deal for them. Because I ain't getting any younger, just getting older.
It sounds good. Well, Nick, how about wrap things up and give us any other words of wisdom that you've got from Uncle Nick?
Well, Uncle Nick would say, a day without barbecue is like a day without sunshine. Eat more barbecue.
Those are some good words of wisdom. That's right. That sounds good.
And those of you that are looking for me with my long beard, it's all gone due to the chemo. But it's coming back, but it ain't going to be very long. So if you saw me with my hair 2 feet long and my beard 2 feet long, you're going to be real startled.
Well, you going to at least wear a Texas cowboy hat, or what will you have on your head?
Oh, I'll probably have on my Texas shirt. It's like the Texas flag. And I don't know. It depends on the weather. I may have on a American flag do-rag, or a Texas flag do-rag, or a black Indiana Jones-looking hat, like the one in my Facebook picture. And, I don't know. I'd be surprised. You won't miss me. I'm right inside the door. So I'll be the only guy with a cannula inside the door. In case you don't know what a cannula is, that's where you get your oxygen in the nose.
Right. And so for anybody listening, this is the Dallas Traderie, and that's in it's 2 weekends. What do you know the date off the top of your head, Nick?
19th and 20th. It's not this weekend coming, but the following weekend.
Right. Okay. 19th and 20th. Gotcha.
This weekend is Chris Jensen's Traderie. I think you're going to be at. And,
yep.
And then the following weekend is Dallas. And then I don't know. I might go to Indy. I'm not sure. Got to find somebody to drive with me, because I can't do that drive by myself anymore. And I will go to Tulsa. So, you know, and Tulsa's a pretty nice small show. It's not a great big show. But there's always some interesting stuff turns up. There's been a couple of Chakotis that have turned up there, a couple of Dazus. And one of the guys went out to flea market and picked up a Chakoti on a shirt for $10.
That'd be nice.
There's bargains to be had.
Yeah.
Bargain. Yeah. Well, Jason, it was nice to talk to you. If I can ever help you in any way, you know that I'm just as close as a phone.
Well, I appreciate it, Nick. And I'll have your email address posted in the show notes. So anybody who wants to try to work some deals with you, they can email you directly and get up with you. And I appreciate you being my guest on the show. One of my goals is to try to have a lot of the unique characters in the hobby as my guests, and you definitely qualify as one of those veteran characters.
Yeah, curmudgeons. You can put my phone number in there too if you want to. It won't bother
okay.
me.
I'll do that.
Phone. I'm willing to work with anybody. You know, making a deal.
Okay. That's what you want to hear. All right, Nick, I got to close the show out. Thanks again. Appreciate you being on. This is Nick Loesch, First Call Texas on eBay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.